Well, let me add my welcome to Andy. Great to have you with us. My name is James, one of the ministers here at Earlwood. And as we begin, I want to tell you a story about an old man. His name was Captain Tom Moore, and he was a 99-year-old war veteran. He wanted to do his part earlier this year and to help those who are struggling with COVID-19. But what could he do? I mean, he was a frail old man with a walker, nearing the end of his life. What could he possibly do to help? Well, after much thought, he came up with a plan. He made an attempt to say, before my 100th birthday, I want to complete 100 laps of my garden. Just 100 laps. And I'm going to use that in order to raise money for British hospitals. His aim was 2,000 Australian dollars. But by the time of this recording, he has raised a staggering 53 million Australian dollars. Isn't that incredible? This one man wanted to make a difference. He wanted to help his fellow human being. He wanted to love his neighbor. Friends, this is the kind of love that can change the world. It inspires people. It boosts morale. It encourages us all. It's the kind of neighborly love that we really need in a time like this. But here's the thing. I'll let you in on a little secret. We can all be like Captain Tom Moore. Each one of us actually has what it takes to love our neighbor just like him. So if you want to be like him, then you have come to the right place. You see, today we are going to be looking at loving our neighbor. And I have 3 points for us as we seek to do this. We're going to be looking at a parable that Jesus once told. It's a very famous one. It's called the Good Samaritan. We'll firstly start by looking at who is my neighbor. We'll then look at why we should love them. And finally, we're going to unpack how we should love them. Very simple. Who is my neighbor? How we should love them. I'm sorry, why we should love them and how we should love them. So let's get stuck in. Who is my neighbor? Well, at this stage in Luke's narrative, Jesus had got himself a bit of a reputation. He had disrupted the establishment with a message to the masses. You see, the religious elite, they had a bit of a monopoly going on heaven. They preached that in order to get to heaven, you need to follow their interpretation of God's law to the letter. It was kind of like putting a heavy wooden beam on someone's shoulders and telling them if they wanted to go to heaven, you have to carry this beam at all times. It was driven by fear, by guilt, by shame. But here's the thing. This is actually what every single world religion still does today. It still tells us today that if you want to get into heaven, you need to carry a heavy, heavy load. But then this rogue rabbi comes along and blows this idea right out of the water. He says you don't have to carry the heavy beam. That heaven is open to all who put their faith in God. You can see why his opponents didn't like him. So, and to put this young upstart in his place, the religious leaders send along one of their experts. His plan was very simple. He was going to trap Jesus in his own words, and thereby removed any of Jesus' influence over the crowds. The trap was simple. Now get Jesus to admit that the law was unnecessary for salvation, and then school him with passages that showed it was. But things don't quite go to plan. The trapper gets trapped. Look with me, verse 25 of our passage. Rabbi, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Jesus replied, what is written in the law? How do you read it? The man answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as ourself. You have answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this and you shall live. Do you see the trap? Instead of admitting that the law was unnecessary for salvation, Jesus says that it's completely necessary. And he agrees that not only is there a heavy beam, but it's far heavier than even the lawyer would care to admit. You see, to get yourself into heaven, all you have to do is to love God with 100% of your mind, with 100% of your heart, by doing 100% of what God asks 100% of the time. That's all. And this is where the discussion about salvation takes a bit of a different route. You see, no amount of good deeds, no amount of religious observance can get you into heaven by your own merit. Now, that's a pretty big deal. Not even this expert of the law who has lived a life devoted to building up his good deeds, not even he can get there on his own. We all need God to do something for us in order to get us in. And if this is the case, then we're actually all in the same boat together. You see, when you truly understand this, then it will completely change the way that you treat other people. In fact, as we will see, the way we treat others is actually the best indication for us understanding this truth. If you look down on others or feel superior to them, then you haven't yet understood that before God, we are all equal. We can't get ourselves into heaven by our own good deeds. At this point, the lawyer should have come and knelt before Jesus and admitted his inability to meet God's standards. He should have begged for Jesus' help. But like many, he's not yet ready to admit that he has a need. And so he goes looking for a loophole. Verse 21, follow with me. He wanted to justify himself. So he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Do you see what he's doing? He still wanted to find a way to get into heaven by his own merit. He wanted Jesus to define neighbor in such a sense that was achievable. But Jesus sees what's happening, and he turns the screws on this man to show that God's requirements are actually impossible. And this is when he tells the famous parable of the Good Samaritan. Now, to fully feel the weight of this, we need to know how much Jews and Samaritans hated each other. One Jewish leader of the time wrote this: "He that eats the bread of the Samaritans is like one who eats the flesh of swine." And we know how much Jewish people don't like swine. The Samaritans were treated as racial half-breeds, as religious heretics by the Jews. It's kind of the way that Trump voters think about Bernie Sanders, right? There's utter hatred between these two groups. It's into that background that Jesus tells a story of two religious men who walk past another Jewish man on the side of the road and leave him for dead. It's the kind of story that's heading for a tragedy. But then Jesus puts a sworn enemy of the Jews into the place of power in the story and shows how he loves his neighbor at great cost to himself. The Samaritan stops for the Jew. He's filled with compassion for his fellow man. He ignores the danger. He gives costly medical aid and he takes him to an inn. And there he forks out money to the innkeeper to look after him until he's fully recovered. This bitter enemy counts the cost of his convenience, his safety, his money, and gladly pays it in full. And friends, if a Samaritan can be a neighbor to a Jew, then anyone can be a neighbor to anyone else. Jesus' point with the parable is this: to get into heaven through your own effort, you need to love God with 100% of yourself, 100% of the time. Easy? But as Christians know, the whole reason Jesus came to earth was to fix this impossible question, this impossible equation. And once we've seen what God has done to fix this problem, it actually transforms us. And it gives us an even bigger motivation to love other people. This leads us to our second point. Why should we love our neighbor? Now, there are many ways to be motivated to love someone, and most of them actually stem from a sense of guilt or shame or duty or even just emotion. Now, they might get us to kind of give up some time, maybe some money, but they end up weighing us down like that heavy beam on the religious leaders. But here's the thing. Those motivations, they can only get you so far. Jesus presses deeper. You see, the thing that all of those motivations have in common is that by helping others, we end up helping ourselves. Friends, that is not love. That is just another form of selfishness, is it not? In his parable, Jesus takes the focus off us and gives us a far more powerful motivation to loving other people. It's gratitude. You see, who are we supposed to be in this parable? You ever thought about that? Are we supposed to be the Good Samaritan? Is that how you think of yourself? Or maybe you might think of yourself as the religious leaders. You see the problem, but you don't want to be involved. Well, I don't think Jesus wants either of those things to be who we picture ourselves in the story. Jesus wants us to imagine ourselves as the helpless, beaten man left for dead on the side of the road. Because spiritually speaking, that is what we all are. Paul says in Ephesians 2, because of our sin, our rebellion against God, every human being is spiritually dead, though physically alive. So then who is the Good Samaritan who walks the dangerous path? Now, who is the man who brings the beaten and broken back to life? Who is the man that gladly spends huge amounts of money and time to pay the debt of a bitter enemy? Is it not Jesus? You see, don't you see? Jesus calls us to love our neighbor out of the gratitude that we feel for what he has done for us. You see, he loved us even when we brought the curse of death on ourselves through our sin. He loved us even though we are so often ungrateful and thankless. He loved us even when he had nothing to spare but his very life. Friends, we can only be truly good Samaritans because we have known the love of the Great Samaritan. 2,000 years ago, after enduring hours of whipping and beatings, a weary Jesus was forced to carry a heavy wooden beam up a hill to his own death. He was a perfect man, one who had never sinned, who was innocent before God's law, who actually loved 100% of the people, 100% of the time, with 100% of his heart. And yet this heavy beam was loaded on his back and four iron nails were hammered through his flesh into that beam. The full wrath of God owing for our sin was poured out on him and it crushed him. Why did he do it? I mean, if he was perfect, why did he carry this weight? Well, friends, it was so that you and I didn't have to. Jesus took our place when he died on that cross. He carried the weight of our sin for rejecting against God so that we could be with him in heaven. Such was his love for us that it cost him his life. And yet he gladly bore it. If you want to love like him, you need to receive love from him. And we will only receive that love when we come to him as poor, as needy, as destitute, and throw ourselves at his feet and ask for him to forgive us. That's what will transform our heart. You see, once we see what Jesus has done for us, we will be filled with gratitude and thankfulness. And our hard hearts will be softened towards those who are our neighbors. Okay, now that we've seen the motivation and who our neighbors are, this brings us to the practical bit. How do we actually do it? Well, I have 8 quick-fire practical things that we can do during COVID-19 to love our neighbours. Are you ready? The first one is do nothing. Do nothing. Now, this might seem a little counterintuitive, but many of us still need to hear that one of the best ways of loving our neighbours in this crisis is to stay at home. By all means, go get your exercise, do your shopping, work your essential job, then stay at home and stop the spread of the virus to the marginalized, to the elderly. Second one, give away some of your valuables. Toilet paper, hand sanitizer, rice, pasta, soap. Trust that God will look after you even if you give something like that away. Next, offer. Offer to mow the lawn, maybe for an elderly neighbor, whoever needs it. Go do some exercise with someone who lives alone. Even just drop some packaged cookies to your neighbor with a note with your phone number asking if they need any help. Maybe you could go to the grocery store for someone who's shut in. Maybe you could just phone a friend. You see, calling anyone, and particularly someone who's older, it'll really make their day. It'll really make a difference in the midst of this isolation. Maybe call someone and ask them how they're going. Maybe how they're really going, if they allow you to ask that. And then just ask them if they want to talk, or if maybe they just want some company on the phone. Finally, risk your health and safety and time and energy and money, whatever it is, to help. Don't let the risk of illness stop us from being good Samaritans, particularly now. Friends, we need to realize as we finish up that loving our neighbor won't get us into heaven. In fact, there is nothing that will get us there by our own effort. We will always fail to love 100% of the time. But knowing that Jesus' costly death has already got us into heaven, well, that's the best motivation we could ever have to loving others. Let's not be like those religious leaders in the parable who were too busy or too afraid or too stingy to help those in need. Let us think of how Jesus loved us even when we were poor and beat up and destitute and in need. And let's then do the same to others. Not because we feel like we need to carry the heavy beam ourselves, but thankful that Jesus has already carried it for us. Amen.